This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Dual attacks on religious worshipers. Good morning. I'm Mike Gavin in for Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, sitting in for Jennifer Koshenka. It's Monday, December 30th, 2019, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Two people are dead, including the gunman, after a shootout at a North Texas church.
A man whose family says has a long history of mental illness has been charged with five counts of attempted murder after a stabbing spree at a Hanukkah party in suburban New York.
The U.S. responds to Iran's aggressiveness with airstrikes in Iraq and Syria.
And how a new show about a new streaming service is going old school with its approach.
I think for people who tuned in right away and maybe have some familiarity with TV from past decades, it started to look kind of surprisingly familiar in some ways.
Wall Street Journal reporter John Jurgensen on how a lone wolf hero with a healthy dash of Baby Yoda has broken through the streaming clutter. More from John in about 20 minutes. A shootout at a Texas church Sunday has left two people dead, including the shooter. Authorities say the gunman opened fire at the West Freeway Church of Christ in White Settlement, a suburb north of Fort Worth. FBI Special Agent Matthew DeSarno.
The FBI is working collaboratively with DPS, with White Settlement Police, with Fort Worth Police, in a large collective effort, investigative effort, to identify motive, to determine whether or not the shooter had an ideology that was driving him.
Three people, including the person who they believe to be the shooter, were transported from the scene in critical condition. Two of the people, including the shooter, died while en route to the hospital, and the third person was successfully resuscitated by paramedics. Two more people sustained minor injuries as they ducked for cover inside the church. White Settlement Police Chief J.P. Bevering says that the gunman was shot by two worshipers who were armed and returned fire.
The suspect is deceased. The threat was stopped thanks to the quick and heroic actions of those safety members inside the church.
The shooting was captured on video as the church service was apparently being streamed on YouTube. Meanwhile, in a suburb of New York City, police say an assailant who stabbed five people attending a party at a Hasidic rabbi's home Saturday night appears to have been acting alone. 37-year-old Grafton Thomas is accused of attempted murder after bursting into the Hanukkah celebration in Rockland County, about 30 miles north of New York City. Police said he fled and was later arrested in Manhattan by two officers who were on the lookout for his car. New York City Police Commissioner Dermot Shea says this is part of a disturbing increase in hate crimes against the Jewish community.
We've been speaking what we've been seeing in New York City on the crime side for some time this year. An increase in swastikas, an increase in hate speech, escalation into shoving, some assaults, a 21% increase in anti-Semitic hate crimes in New York City.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is calling the attack an act of domestic terrorism and also alluded to an upward trend of hate and violence.
If anyone thinks that something poisonous is not going on in this country, then they're in denial, frankly.
President Donald Trump on Twitter called the attack horrific. Thomas was arraigned on Sunday on five counts of attempted murder and ordered held on $5 million bail. The U.S. has carried out airstrikes against an Iranian-backed Shiite militia group in Iraq and Syria in the Trump administration's most forceful response to Tehran's assertive posture in the region. Defense Secretary Mark Esper.
The targets we attacked included three targets in western Iraq and two targets in eastern Syria that were either command and control facilities or weapons caches for Kitab Hezbollah.
Officials said the strikes came in response to an attack on Friday in which more than 30 rockets were fired at an Iraqi military base near Kirkuk, killing a U.S. contractor and wounding four U.S. troops. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
What we did was take a decisive response that makes clear what President Trump has said for months and months and months, which is that we will not stand for the Islamic Republic of Iran to take actions that put American men and women in jeopardy.
A media official for the militia said 25 of the group's members had been killed and at least 20 wounded in the strikes along the Iraq-Syria border. An Iraqi official put the death toll at 15 and added that a weapons storage facility was set on fire. 11 minutes after the hour now on this morning, America's First News.
Have you realized yet the things you wanted to do in 2019 but didn't? So one goal I have for the new year is being more connected with others around me. The best way I found to maximize my time searching and filtering through information on how is through Blinkist. You see, Blinkist takes key insights from over 3,000 nonfiction books in over 27 categories and turns them into 15-minute text and audio explainers called Blinks. Blinkist helps me to understand the core ideas of each book. So when I'm commuting to and from work, Blinkist is great for me to get into a topic quickly, find new ones, and figure out which books I want to read or listen to, like How to Make People Like You in 90 Seconds or Less by Nicholas Boothman. Right now, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial and get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/morning to get 25% off and a 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/morning.
Gord Deal taking the day off. I'm Mike Gavin. Thanks for stopping by. Well, you know, they entered the race late, but two billionaires seeking the Democratic nomination are making up for lost time. Together, Tom Steyer and Mike Bloomberg have poured nearly $200 million into television and digital advertising alone, with the former New York mayor spending an unprecedented $120 million in roughly 3 weeks after he joined the presidential race. So what's all the spending getting the two mega-rich candidates? Well, not a whole lot so far. For more, we're joined by Maya King from Politico. Maya, take us through what's been happening.
This gives us a great example of just how much of a coalition money can build. So Steyer has spent a considerable amount of money, mostly in early primary states. That's South Carolina, Nevada, Iowa, New Hampshire. And he's seen the most growth among black voters in South Carolina. However, it's still rather incremental at 4%. While Bloomberg has saturated the markets in states that have the most Democratic delegates. So that's Texas, Florida, and California. And he has more of a national standing, but it's still in the single digits. So you see, you know, $200 million combined between the two of them still keeps them right at the single digits in national polls. And as we head into 2020, it's pretty difficult at this stage to see whether or not that really changes.
And in the case of Bloomberg, his spending, about $130 million, you wrote, has taken place in roughly 3 weeks, which is pretty mind-boggling.
Yeah, absolutely. My sources have said, you know, we've never seen anything like this, and we can't compare it to anything. We're thinking about, you know, the next highest spender was Barack Obama in 2012, spending over $300 million in an entire year. And now Bloomberg has managed to spend more than a third of that, like you said, in 3 weeks.
Now, we know that Bloomberg is sitting out the early primaries, choosing to focus on Super Tuesday, which is still 2 months away. I mean, if he's spending this much now, we can only imagine how much he's got in store for February, right?
Yeah, and the interesting thing about Bloomberg's spending strategy is that he drops about $10 and $15 million a week. So I think that by March, we really will see him probably in the 200s, if not more. And it'll be really difficult for whoever starts to advertise in those Super Tuesday states to catch him at all.
Now, you're right that both Bloomberg and Steyer are starting to see some incremental growth, but is that enough at what's fast becoming kind of the late stage of the game here?
Well, I think there are certainly diminishing returns. Like I said before, you know, it'll be really difficult to see how either of these billionaires gets out of the single digits, because the more that you saturate the markets, people know who you are, and now they're just irritated with your ad content. And it doesn't necessarily, I don't think, impact their voting behaviors or their preferences in the end.
And of course, all the spending plays right into the hands of progressives like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, who have made railing against billionaires one of the centerpieces of their campaigns.
Yes, it really does. And it makes it difficult for them, of course. Their ad content, the advertisements that they've put out, they've sort of leaned into their humble beginnings. Bloomberg talking about being a middle-class child in Massachusetts, and Steyer talking about the things that he's funded. that have been able to help middle-class families. These are the things, these are the messages that they've tried to use in their ads to sort of combat the messaging that Sanders and Warren have put forth a lot, saying that, you know, this campaign, this election, there's no place for billionaires there.
Now, you quoted a pollster in your story that said that rich white billionaires don't have much appeal to black voters in the South. Now, that's a group that whoever emerges from the Democratic primaries is going to need if they hope to defeat Donald Trump, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And it'll be difficult, again, for them to sort of tweak their messaging in their advertising to market themselves as allies of Southern African Americans. Not just because they've championed, either one of them has championed, initiatives that have actually affected the African American community, but because they really don't have anything in common with these voters. And so it's hard, again, to see, how in the future, especially in states like South Carolina, Georgia, even Tennessee, how these billionaires manage to break through with that really crucial voting group by saying, you know, vote for me and this is something, I can make a change in your community.
All right, thanks, Maya. Maya King from Politico joining us this morning. 19 minutes after the hour, Rasa Kay is here with three big things you need to know.
Well, Mike, two people in North Texas have died following a shooting Sunday morning during services at the West Freeway Church of Christ in White Settlement, about 10 miles west of Fort Worth. The shooter was shot dead by parishioners who returned fire against him.
There was a security team inside the church, and they eliminated the threat.
That's Chief of Police J.P. Bevering. One of the parishioners who shot back at the gunman died at a local hospital, and a third person sustained life-threatening injuries. Number two, the New York City area shocked by yet another anti-Semitic attack this holiday season. Five people stabbed Saturday night at a Hanukkah celebration at an Orthodox rabbi's home in suburban Rockland County. Two of them now in serious or critical condition. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo.
If anyone thinks that something poisonous is not going on in this country, then they're in denial, frankly.
A man armed with a machete entered the home and attacked the group before fleeing the scene in his car. NYPD officers later picked up a suspect in Harlem. He's identified as 37-year-old Grafton Thomas of Greenwood Lake, a suburb some 20 miles away from the crime scene. He's being held on $5 million bail. Number three, Georgia Congressman and civil rights icon John Lewis is undergoing treatment for stage 4 pancreatic cancer discovered earlier this month during a routine medical visit. In a statement, the 79-year-old says he'll fight the illness as, quote, "We still have many bridges to cross." Russian President Vladimir Putin sent personal thanks to President Trump for a tip he says helped quash terrorism attacks reportedly planned in St. Petersburg. Two Russians have been detained on suspicion of plotting violence during New Year's festivities. Tour helicopter operations in Hawaii are under the microscope after a deadly crash last week, one of several recent accidents in the state. Congressman Ed Case is calling the trips unsafe and lacking proper oversight. Officials confirmed there were no survivors in Thursday's helicopter crash along Hawaii's rugged Napali coast. And these Texas parents should have thought it through when their 12-year-old son asked for a magnifying glass for Christmas. Interior designer Nisa Lynn Parsons shared on Facebook how Christmas Day was memorable, to say the least, after her son Caden used his new gift to try to light things on fire. The blaze he started by burning a newspaper outside ended up scorching the front yard of the family home, in addition to destroying some of the Christmas lights out front.
This is something that I never did. Did you actually use a magnifying glass to try to burn things when you were a kid?
Absolutely.
I've heard about people doing this. I saw it like on cartoons and things, but I didn't think this was something you could actually do fairly easily, I guess, as this kid did.
Oh, it's great because my grandparents had one that they used to help them read. And yeah. So, you know, this is like the greatest toy ever. We'd go out and...
Super thick, like the Coke bottle kind of situation.
It was legit.
All right. Thanks very much, Rasa.
Science grand.
22 minutes after the hour now. On This Morning, America's First News.
Is that a bounty puck? Is that me? Look, there must be some mistake. I can get you more credits.
I can bring you in warm, or I can bring you in cold.
Well, it was one of the most talked about streaming series and a flagship for the launch of Disney's mega subscription video service. But in some surprising ways, The Mandalorian, about a bounty hunter's adventures in the Star Wars universe, which wrapped up its first season on Friday, was also a throwback to the old days of network television. For more, we're joined by Wall Street Journal entertainment reporter John Jurgensen. John, take us through some of the old school ways that The Mandalorian is drawing us in.
Well, I think the first way it broke through is just being Star Wars and on a brand new streaming service, so it certainly had that going for it. But I think for people who tuned in right away and maybe have some familiarity with TV from past decades, it started to look kind of surprisingly familiar in some ways. You have these sort of episodic releases where, you know, a new episode drops each Friday with very, you know, not really in keeping with the Netflix model anymore. And you have these sort of closed, adventure-driven episodes where, you know, the Mandalorian hero goes off on an adventure at the beginning of the episode, and by the end of the episode, it's pretty much wrapped up and he's off to the next one. So that is also a little bit different than kind of like the very densely serialized TV that we've been used to in recent years. So they were just kind of echoes of past TV generation, even from, you know, adventure action shows of the 80s and 90s.
Right, or even Westerns from decades before that, which a lot of people say this is just like a Western, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's not hard to, you can literally squint a little bit and see Clint Eastwood, Clint Eastwood in The Mandalorian, and, you know, lots of kind of Western lone wolf heroes that we've been used to, not just in movies, but especially the kind of TV Westerns, which were really kind of the heyday of that genre. Again, it's sort of like adventure of the week. This gunslinger goes from town to town and helps people, even though that's not really his job. He ends up doing it. So some very familiar stuff. So, I mean, of course, they're also like flying around in spaceships and using blasters, and there's the Force and stuff. So very much a lot of the Star Wars stuff. But, you know, even a lot of people recognize that, you know, George Lucas's vision was inspired by Westerns at the time, too. So there's a lineage and a DNA here.
And of course, we can't forget about the cute sidekick with Baby Yoda, who's now become a hit on the show, but on the internet as well.
I mean, do you have all day to talk about Baby Yoda? Because that seems to be what everyone wants to talk about all the time. I mean, it's an undeniable appeal. And like, as soon as that little creature popped up on the screen at the end of the first episode, I mean, that was pretty much it for everyone involved. The character kind of took over the show and took over the conversation around the internet. So it's kind of hard to pin down where the appeal of the show itself and the appeal of that character overlap. But, you know, even that's kind of a TV trope from the past, too, the cute sidekick or the comic relief amid all the action. A lot of that's pretty familiar, too. So it just happened to come in an especially cute package in Baby Yoda.
So, John, I'll add one more to the list that I've experienced personally watching The Mandalorian. It's one of the first times I've watched a first-run TV show together with my kids. And I can't be the only Gen X dad who grew up on Star Wars that's experiencing the same kind of family togetherness in front of the TV that we really don't see that much anymore.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, you could argue that so much of our franchise-driven culture is kind of shared now, everything from the Marvel stuff to Star Wars, where, you know, nostalgic older folks like us can share it with our kids. I mean, that's a huge point. But, you know, as you said, it's a pretty rare thing on television.
It is. Thanks, John. Wall Street Journal entertainment reporter John Jurgensen. 30 minutes after the hour now, you're listening to This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
34 minutes after the hour. Thanks for joining us on this Monday, next to last day of the decade. Gordon's off. I'm Mike Gavin, along with Ross Akay. Some of the stories we're following for you today. The search for answers continues in two attacks on groups of religious worshipers over the weekend. The U.S. hits militia targets in Iraq and Syria. Georgia Congressman John Lewis has announced he has stage 4 pancreatic cancer. One Republican senator is asking President Trump to tweet a little less after a recent retweet where the president revealed the name of the alleged Ukraine whistleblower. In sports, the 49ers survived the Seahawks to claim the number one seed in the NFC, while the Patriots were upset by the Dolphins. And the surprising tears of joy shed by an NBA player. That story in about 20 minutes. As elite colleges and universities seek to be more diverse, there is one section on the common application that has become increasingly loaded: the boxes where prospective students are asked about their identity. Students know they face tougher than ever odds of earning admission and feel the pressure to answer in a way that gives them an edge. Wall Street Journal reporter Doug Belkin says colleges, in turn, are frustrated because they have no way to confirm the information. Doug joins us now to go more in depth. Doug, what did you look at here?
We looked at the admissions process at selective schools and how it's changed over time, and the pressure that the demographic questions are putting on students who are trying to get into these schools. You know, what's happened at the university level is that they're under more pressure to look like the country that we're becoming. With the, you know, if you look at the demographics of kids under 25, it's changed pretty quickly. And I think we're pretty close to being about half and half white and non-white now. But a lot of universities have not changed as quickly, so they're focused on trying to become more reflective of the country. As a result, they're asking questions about race and heritage and ethnicity and religion and even sexual orientation. And the idea is to try to get kids from underrepresented backgrounds into the school. And so the perception is that there's something to be gained if you can check off an underrepresented minority box on your common application.
Doug, what about fudging in order to try to tilt the scales in your favor?
Well, that's where things get interesting, and it's a little bit muddy. You know, folks have different ethnic, racial backgrounds in their DNA, and as people are able to take, you know, tests like 23andMe and these DNA tests, you can find out, well, you know, I had a great grandfather from this place or grandmother from this place, and so this is beginning to become something that students are doing. They're taking these DNA tests to get a sense of whether or not it's legitimate for them to check off one of these boxes for a Latino or African American or Caribbean or something that's underrepresented. And then on the other score, the overrepresented groups, which often include Asians and Jews, are often counseled to not check off those boxes when they're asked, you know, if they can get away, if their name is overtly Jewish or Asian, then it probably doesn't matter. But in some cases, there's some wiggle room, and the council gets to leave it out. This is the universities dealing with, you know, race discrimination over a long period of time in this country, and they're this is how they're taking it on. The courts have said that universities can use race in the admissions process. They can have quotas, but they can use it, you know, in the compelling interest of universities to try to balance these things. You know, what schools say is they want to create classes where kids can learn from one another. They're coming in from different backgrounds and different places, and that's part of the learning process. So their goals are noble, and they're trying to match this. When the rubber meets the road, especially at these very selective universities, you get into these sort of comfortable discussions about who's what and what category do you fit in.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Doug Belkin. So, Doug, are colleges allowed to use this information, or is it just for some sort of statistical reasons?
No, they're allowed to use it. They're allowed to build a class as they see fit. You know, again, it's a muddy line between how well you can use it, how much you can use it. But as of 1978, the Supreme Court said, race is a compelling interest, so that this can be taken into account. The thing that surprised me the most about this story was actually the bit about sexual orientation. Schools are also trying to get a number of kids who are trans or bi or homosexual. This has become, in some schools, an underrepresented minority. So schools are asking on essay questions, can you tell us any more, you know, about your orientation or just been a part of your identity. This certainly wasn't around when I was applying to school, so it surprised me that it exists. It's popped up a few years ago.
All right, thanks very much, Doug. Something to keep an eye on. Wall Street Journal reporter Doug Belkin. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Well, as we wrap up the year and the decade, it's no surprise that videos were once again at the center of our pop culture universe. More from our own Gordon Deal.
YouTube is out with its annual Rewind list of the top trending videos that had people in the U.S. talking. How about this stat? People are watching over 1 billion hours of YouTube content per year. And they're not just watching them, too. They're remixing them, sharing them, creating parodies, building communities. We're joined now by Madeline Buxton, YouTube trends expert. Madeline, how do you measure which videos are best?
So we definitely look at views, but we know that audiences are engaging with videos in ways that go beyond just watching them. So we also look at likes, we look at comments, we look at shares. It's a lot of factors that go into putting together these lists.
All right. So take us through a couple of these, the top five, say, most popular videos of 2019.
Sure thing. So Rewind, to start off, is our annual look back at the biggest trends and videos from the past year in pop culture on YouTube. So our top five trending videos in the U.S., starting at number five, we have a short film from Gillette called We Believe the Best Men Can Be.
Bullying.
The Me Too movement against sexual harassment.
Masculinity.
Is this the best a man can get?
This kicked off a debate around masculinity, and it showed us that a lot of videos trend not just because people like to watch them, but they also want to talk about them and debate them. Then we had a challenge video from a creator named Mr. Beast.
Hey, Mr. Beast here. Today we're going to buy every item in this store.
He's one of YouTube's biggest rising stars. He's gotten over 25 million subscribers in just 2 years. In this video, he went into a store, bought everything, and donated it to a homeless shelter. Then we had an hour-long documentary investigation from a creator named Shane Dawson. He's been popular on YouTube since 2008. But has seen a huge resurgence this past year thanks to his new documentary format. Then we had an interview show called Hot Ones. This is one of my favorites. It's a series where celebrities answer tough questions while eating really spicy wings. In this episode, they talked to Gordon Ramsay, who is one of their most requested guests since they started the show in 2015.
Grapefruit in a hot sauce?
Senator.
Are you serious?
And finally, our number one top trending video of the year in the U.S., No More Lies. This was a video from James Charles, one of the beauty community's biggest stars, and it was part of a public back and forth with another beauty creator that became major front page celebrity news.
About what?
He was addressing some allegations that had been made, and they were going back and forth, some drama in the beauty community.
Got it. All right, so for the We Believe from Gillette, what was it about that one that seemed to resonate with viewers?
I think it was really, you know, people saw that they were putting forward a very specific point of view, and we see people coming to YouTube and watching videos and debating them and engaging with them and having conversations about them. And this was because of that strong point of view, people had a lot of things to say about it.
Finish up with Gordon Ramsay. With videos like this, do we just like these type of videos because, say, he's well known, he's a character, obviously his... He uses very salty language to describe the hot wings that he's eating.
He does. I think, you know, with this show in particular, it's really taken the traditional interview format in a new direction and shown how you can combine food with talking to celebrities in a way that we haven't really seen in other places. So I think it was a combination of the star factor plus people just really loving this format.
Take us through a handful of these the top music videos.
Sure. So on our top music video list this year, you'll see all different genres. You'll see some familiar faces like Ariana Grande, some new ones like Billie Eilish. But coming in at number one is a song you probably heard over the summer. It's Old Town Road from Lil Nas X. He was a breakout hip-hop star, a viral sensation. He had this collaboration with Billy Ray Cyrus, and he set the record for the most consecutive weeks at number one on the YouTube music chart.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. What else? Finish out below, like, the top three.
So we also had Yo Gotti featuring Lil Baby. Then we had Polo G. And we had another Lil Nas X, which was the audio version.
YouTube Trends expert Madeline Buxton with our own, hopefully sleeping in this morning, Gordon Deal. 13 minutes now in front of the hour.
Have you realized yet the things you wanted to do in 2019 but didn't? So one goal I have for the new year is being more connected with others around me. The best way I found to maximize my time searching and filtering through information on how is through Blinkist. You see, Blinkist takes key insights from over 3,000 nonfiction books in over 27 categories and turns them into 15-minute text and audio explainers called Blinks. Blinkist helps me to understand the core ideas of each book. So when I'm commuting to and from work, Blinkist is great for me to get into a topic quickly, find new ones, and figure out which books I want to read or listen to, like How to Make People Like You in 90 Seconds or Less by Nicholas Boothman. Right now, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial and get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to get 25% off and a 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/morning.
Gordon's out, but to keep track of what he's up to, make sure you follow him on Twitter. I'm sure lots of wine and snacks happening this holiday. He's at Gordon Deal, of course. Follow the show at This Morning Show. And I'm tweeting as well. You can find me there at Radio Gavin 1. 9 minutes now in front of the hour. Rasa K has returned with three big things you need to know.
Well, Mike, agents from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives are assisting in the investigation of a deadly shooting inside a church during Sunday services outside Fort Worth. A gunman in a pew opened fire Sunday morning, killing one person before being fatally shot by parishioners at the West Freeway Church of Christ in the town of White Settlement. No clues yet as to a motive.
The shooter has had multiple contacts with law enforcement in the past, but he was not on any kind of a watch list.
At Special Agent in Charge of the FBI Dallas Bureau, Matthew DiSarno. Number two, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is calling it an act of domestic terrorism.
It is an American cancer that is spreading in the body politic.
An intruder with a machete burst into the home of a Hasidic rabbi in the New York City suburb of Monzi Saturday night, stabbing five people just as they were gathering to light candles for Hanukkah. Two are in serious or critical condition. NYPD picked up suspect Grafton Thomas hours later in Harlem. He's held on $5 million bond. New York City's been grappling with a disturbing upsurge in anti-Semitic attacks this holiday season. And number three, a winter storm that caused slick roads and highway closures along the Front Range and Eastern Plains over the weekend will center over northern Wisconsin and the Upper Peninsula of Michigan today. I-70 from the Denver area all the way to the Kansas state line was shut down. Parts of Southern California got more rain and snow overnight. A few inches in the same area that was shocked by post-Christmas snow that closed a major interstate and stranded motorists outside L.A. An Ohio doctor accused of ordering drug overdoses in the deaths of 25 hospital patients is suing his former employer for defamation. Dr. William Husel's suit against the Columbus area Mount Carmel Health System and Trinity Health maintains the near-death patients died from their illnesses, not the powerful painkiller fentanyl. Husel was indicted in June on 25 counts of murder and has pleaded not guilty. The Idaho Humane Society helped firefighters in hazmat gear and oxygen masks to air out the home of an apparent animal hoarder from potentially toxic levels of ammonia from animal waste. The woman's charged with 58 counts of animal cruelty after authorities rescued 55 dogs and 3 cats from her 600-square-foot home. And, of course, big winner this weekend at the box office, Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker, another $72 million to tighten its grip on the top of the box office.
I tell you, I know there's been some rough weather around the country, but here in the Northeast, it's been almost too nice, almost too warm to go to the movies. Like, we almost feel like we want to go outside and frolic here during the holidays.
I did a little yard work yesterday. My daffodils are coming up. I'm not happy about this.
The most wonderful time of the year, Rasa. Mm. Thanks very much. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
In case you missed it, a touching moment over the weekend for an NBA player. Chris Silva received the best Christmas gift he could ask for Friday night when his team, the Miami Heat, surprised him by reuniting him with his mother, who he hadn't seen in several years. They tearfully embraced on the court shortly before the team tipped off against the Indiana Pacers. According to Fox News, the 23-year-old rookie left his home in Africa in 2012 with a dream of making it to the NBA. In the 7 years since, he had only seen his parents and siblings once when he returned home for 2 weeks to renew his visa as a sophomore at the University of South Carolina. The Heat, the NBA, and NBA Africa teamed up with this holiday season to surprise Silva, flying in his mother hours before Friday's game. A very emotional Silva exclaimed, "That's my mom," after spotting her as his teammates and coaches clapped and cheered. Silva's mom had flown 18 hours to see her son, and even though Silva didn't play, she stuck around to watch his team edge the Pacers 113-112. That's a wrap on this hour. For Rasa K, I'm Mike Gavin. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.